Carl Safina is a prominent ecologist and marine conservationist. He's also the author of Voyage of the Turtle, In Pursuit of the Earth's Last Dinosaur. The book focuses on the leatherback turtle, a reptile that behaves like a warm-blooded dinosaur and can withstand colder water than most fish. Safina remembers how he found out about the ancient leatherback.
I've been around the ocean, on the ocean, in the ocean for a really long time, and I had seen several leatherback turtles in the ocean. The first one when I was a teenager. I was about 14 or so. We were fishing for tuna on my uncle's boat, and suddenly something caught my eye about, 50 yards behind the boat, 100 yards behind the boat, something like that, where the waves were breaking over something. And it looked to me like there was a Volkswagen drifting in the sea. And I looked at it trying to figure out what was it that I was staring at until this giant head that looked like the head of a mechanical monster just came up for a gasp of air and left me breathless.
They seem to be unafraid of humanity. You talk about seeing it come up for air behind the boat. You talk in the book about this female leatherback coming up on the shore amidst a crowd of people to lay her eggs. They seem almost oblivious to mankind.
Well, almost. If they come up and there's a crowd of people there, they often will turn right around and go back. But once they're committed, once they start laying their eggs, then they do actually seem literally oblivious. They seem like they're in a trance. And they will continue with that. 99% of the time, they'll continue with that, even if there are people who gather around to watch them. Somebody made an interesting remark to me one time that the leatherback turtle is the largest wild animal you can walk right up to without getting attacked. And I think that's true. I can't think of another animal that's larger and more peaceable.
Well, there aren't very many animals that weigh up to a ton.
Well, right.
To begin with.
Right. And many of them you don't want to walk right up to.
That's right. Yeah. And I suppose that there's no reason for them to be particularly concerned about humanity. After all, the leatherback that you describe has been around forever.
About 100 million years. People have been around for about 100,000 years. So for the most part, leatherbacks really are accustomed to a world without people, although now the world is quite dominated with people everywhere that they go, whether it's in the oceans where there are lots of fishing boats working or on land where there are usually a lot of people on the beaches or near the beaches.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the normal life of a sea turtle to establish the baseline where they have lived and where man has begun to interfere with them. Mm-hmm. You followed sea turtles around the world.
Yes.
In the course of researching this book.
Right.
Where do you find them to begin with? Are they everywhere?
There are seven species of sea turtles, and sea turtles live... the leatherback has the widest range possibly of any animal in the world, except for maybe two or three of the great whale species. But you find sea turtles, including the leatherback, all throughout the tropical oceans and throughout most of the temperate oceans. And then the leatherbacks live throughout all of the temperate oceans beyond the cold limits of some of the other species. So they get up to the higher latitudes in the north, down to the higher latitudes in the south, and they have a variety of extraordinary adaptations, including heat generation that no other reptile has, fat layers like a marine mammal, countercurrent heat exchangers like a bird, and ways of generating and conserving heat that allow them to get hit with extreme amounts of cold and even continue swimming when the water starts to get slushy with ice, where most sea turtles would be stunned and killed way before then. So they get pretty far north. There's even an Eskimo carving from pretty far north in Canada that seems to be a leatherback turtle that must have absolutely awed the person who found that animal.
I bet. And on top of that, they can go to depths that man has not yet been able to get to.
They blow past every other air-breathing, breath-holding animal, which is to say they dive deeper than any whale. Their maximum dive is several hundred feet past the deepest known dives of sperm whales. Or elephant seals, which is a less well-known animal that also dives thousands of feet. But they can go to about 3,600 feet down while holding their breath. And down there, it's absolutely pitch black. No light gets to that depth. It is just a few degrees above freezing, and it's extraordinary. These are amazingly tough, tough animals.
You begin to see how they might have lasted 100 million years with adaptability.
They've been challenged with almost everything the world has to throw at them, and this animal has survived.
What do they eat?
Well, that's interesting. They eat stinging jellyfish. And they eat jellyfish almost exclusively, and some of their main diet items are some of the most venomous, hot, stinging jellyfish in the ocean. In fact, one of their main prey species is called the lion's mane jellyfish. And I once was on my boat where we had a blue shark swimming around the boat, and we started throwing pieces of fish to the blue shark, and it began picking up the fish and picking up the pace, and it was, you know, fairly agitatedly swimming around eating all this stuff we were throwing. And then a lion's mane jellyfish, a small one, drifted out from under the boat, and the shark bit it by accident and spat it out instantly like it had just swallowed a flamethrower. But I've seen leatherbacks chomping at these things at the surface as happily as if they were eating pecan pie.
Another suggestion that they might be highly adaptable.
Right.
How do they get along with the rest of the marine life that surrounds them?
They're just very slow and steady, and they go on these very extensive migrations from breeding sites that are mostly in the tropics. Although in the U.S., there are a few that nest as far north as South Carolina, and I think one or two have nested in North Carolina. But there are a few hundred nest in Florida. Thousands now nest in the tropical Caribbean, like in Trinidad especially, and in the Guyanas in South America. And then they will go as far north as Newfoundland or the Flemish Cap, which is this shoal east of the Grand Banks, east of Canada, pretty much in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. It's where the boat in the Perfect Storm was fishing. Then they'll go around to West Africa, maybe up to the Bay of Biscay off of France. They may be in the ocean for 12 years or so before they mature and then go back to breed. When they go to breed, the males will go near the nesting beaches. Females will converge. They will mate. Only the females ever come out of the water ever again. They lay eggs. Then they lay eggs several times each 10 days during any given breeding season. But then they won't lay again or breed again for anywhere from usually 2 to 4 years, during which time they go on these migrations that take them from one rim of the ocean to the next, or straight across the Pacific. They breed, for instance, in New Guinea, and then swim to California and Oregon and feed on dense populations of jellyfish there. And again, they're at sea for several years. They may, in the winter, swim back all the way to the West Pacific, then swing back again. And then when it's their year to breed, they'll go back to the nesting beaches and come out and try to keep the species going.
Carl Safin is the author of Voyage of the Turtle, In Pursuit of the Earth's Last Dinosaur.